Welcome back to The Daily Drum on WHUR, Sirius XM Channel 141, 96.3 HD2 and 98.3 FM. This is the Insights segment. I'm Harold Fisher. It is election night 2023. No midterm congressional voting or presidential primaries, but there are big issues and party considerations in play tonight. Virginia's legislature is obviously one of the big political prizes, but there are others, big and small, that could foreshadow the presidential race next year. We're talking about it all tonight at the Political Roundtable. My guests are Dr. Ravi Perry, political science professor here at Howard University, and political analyst Dr. Michael Fontroy and Dr. Christopher Meltzer. Lines are open. If you have a comment or a question, give us a call at 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. You can X me at H Fisher, WHUR, or find me on Instagram at Harold T. Fisher. Guys, thank you so much for coming to the political party. No pun intended.
Thanks for having me. It's good to be back with you.
Yes, indeed. Dr. Meltzer, can you hear me? Dr. Meltzer, can you hear me? Doc, are you there? Dr. Metzler?
Yes, I'm here.
There you go. Hear me? Yeah, I thought you decided to just go vote. I didn't know what was going on with you. But thank you so much. So let's start with the Virginia Commonwealth, a big political prize, as I just said. Dr. Perry, what's at stake here?
Well, there are 140 seats in both chambers in Virginia that are up for stake here. And for Governor Youngkin, it's an opportunity possibly to either cement his agenda that he's attempted to since his election. As we know, there are no gubernatorial reelections in Virginia. And so this is really pivotal to his potential rise or not. And should there be, let's say, even a formidable challenge to a potentially convicted Donald Trump that might therefore make a opening in a new Republican primary somehow in the spring of 2024. Tonight is important for Youngkin in that regard. There are three black queer candidates also, I'll emphasize, running for office in the state legislature today in the state of Virginia, more than any other state today as well, other than California, where there are two. And so it's an important opportunity. But for Democrats in Virginia, they, of course, want to maintain the Senate, and they have some challenges with some formidable Republican challengers in some key races. But Democrats in Virginia have put up some real clear, consistent messaging, I think, that makes the Senate still a toss-up. Of course, the delegate chamber is another matter in the Commonwealth. And having been a former resident there for many years, I think that we don't really know where that's going to go. But given some of the challenges in rural Virginia, in terms of the Democratic Party base there not being so strong, it's possible that Youngkin may still have a split chamber by the end of the night if Democrats can hold the Senate. But it seems unlikely that Democrats might take over the delegate house today. But you never know. It all depends on turnout.
Dr. Fontroy, I have never seen so many commercials for these delegate races. Not even so much the Senate, but just these delegate races. I mean, from my news mind, I don't see the candidates. I see money, money, money. Where is this money coming from? I've heard numbers in some races where we're talking about anywhere from $500,000 to $1 million being spent between opponents for a delegate race.
Yeah. So this speaks to the importance of Virginia and the overall national landscape. So if, as Dr. Perry was just mentioning, if the Democrats take control of both chambers, then this is the beginning of the end of Glenn Youngkin's governorship. He then becomes a lame duck, and he's not going to be able to advance any of the, or many of the items that he has in mind, particularly around the issue of abortion. But of course, if he's able to get control, then it's a completely different ball game. He then has the wind at his back, and he then becomes a viable option in the event that something happens on the national Republican presidential nomination fight. And so there's a lot at stake here. And as a result of that, people around the country know it. And the money folks are saying, hey, look, we got to make this happen for us in Virginia. And if we do, and it takes a little extra money to do it, then so be it. Alternatively, if they don't spend the money, they'll always kick themselves and wonder what if.
Mm-hmm. You know, Dr. Metzler, to Dr. Fauntroy's point, do you see tonight as a wind at his back opportunity for Governor Youngkin? It's really, really hard to tell which way the winds are blowing, and we can say that for just about every election. But you know, the issue of abortion, obviously a very, very big issue. The issue of education and where the governor wants to take parental choice in what children learn. All of these things, I think, are at stake tonight.
Yeah, I think it depends on which Glenn Youngkin you're looking at. And here's what I mean by that. I think on the issue of abortion, on all of those issues, he has tried to play, I'm open to this, I'm open to that. He actually is not. And so I think what happens, particularly on the abortion issue, look, if he ends up having both chambers, the fact is they're going to do whatever they want to do. And guess what? He's going to be out of there because it's only one term. And so I think voters are going to look at that and look at that in very circumspect in some cases, because, you know, he is trying to come across as this moderate, reasonable person, when in fact the reality is he is not. From my perspective, he's the classic wolf in sheep's clothing, if you will, on all of those issues.
Yeah. 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. We are at the Political Roundtable talking about Election 2023, obviously Virginia, the big prize, but we're going to be talking about some of the city elections. Going to give you kind of a quick rundown of what's happening in Maryland, what's happening in Ohio, what's going on in Mississippi, and what all of this portends as we move forward to 2024. If you have a comment or a question, give us a call at 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Okay, I've got to ask all of you about this. Dr. Perry, this is another one of those one of those Virginia stories, and is this where we are when we're talking about, you know, Susanna Gibson? This is the woman who is Democrat running for delegate in Virginia. It was revealed back in October that she and her husband were on a sex website soliciting tips for performing, you know, sex acts, and she's still on the ballot, and people are still supporting her. Are we getting to the point now in American politics where you can be on a pornographic website, you can grab people by the hoo-ha, and you could... I guess maybe I'm old here. Somebody help
Make
me.
Make some sense out of this.
You know, yeah. Because, you know, I'm telling my age. When, you know, when Gary Hart ran for
president. Oh, my goodness, yes.
You know, yeah. Way back. I don't even, what year was that? 80-something. Thank you. 1984.
Yeah. Monkey Business.
Yeah, Monkey Business. Yeah. That was the name of the boat. And, you know, when it came out that he had had an affair, he was done like an Easter ham.
Yeah.
But not... You can be on a porn site and you can still be a viable candidate. Help me here, Robbie.
I think there's two things here. I think you also answered the question in your question, and that you mentioned that, you know, you can grab people by the hoo-ha, which refers back to President Trump when he was then candidate Trump running, and that tape being released just a couple of weeks before the election in 2016. I do think that was a pivotal election in terms of the sexual or morality ethics that whatever we may have had, both in terms of the political parties, in terms of the nominee choices they made in Donald Trump in 2016, but also in the choice of the American evangelical community to stand by him, even though he clearly, obviously, is not, you know,
a church goer.
Yeah. 2 Corinthians, yeah. 1 Samuel. Yeah. I mean, like, you know, he, you know, obviously, you know, clearly, but still, because of political conservative values being really the primary interest that the evangelical church is interested in pushing, you know, the sexual moral ethics have really gone away, I think, in party politics, sadly, in American politics. Yes. And so, yes, you are old.
I am old. Yes, I am. My goodness.
So let me just add quickly. I think it speaks also to the evolution of the Commonwealth of Virginia.
Yeah.
So I went to undergrad in Virginia, and I can remember the blue laws in the state where you couldn't go and buy a beer on a Sunday, and the malls were closed. And now you fast forward all these years later, and you have this, right? And most people aren't even really blinking an eye about it, particularly if there are other issues around which they're more readily exercised. Right. Yeah. What else is at stake? And so I think, at some level, voters are able to compartmentalize more so now than years ago. And I also think that, to Dr. Perry's point, there are a whole lot of people that would jump up and down about Tara Durant now, but they already made peace with Donald Trump.
Mm-hmm.
And you can't make peace with that and then jump up and down about Tara Durant.
Yeah.
And so I think that's where we are.
Dr. Messler.
Yeah, I think that is exactly where we are. And then when you have Lauren Boebert and Marjorie Taylor Greene.
Yeah, Lauren Boebert in Colorado.
Right. Yeah. When you have all of that, you cannot be hypocritical. You cannot be moral when it serves you and immoral when it doesn't. And so I think as a result of that, that is exactly where you are. Look, the Republican Party has made it clear the kind of party that it has become. It's not the Republican Party that I knew, but it has made it very clear. And so this feigned hypocrisy in some places is laughable, and I think that is exactly right. Voters are compartmentalizing it, and they're saying it's a classic, you know, all the folks in glass houses throwing stones.
Yeah. Much more to talk about, and I will be going to the phone lines, but I needed to get this in because there's been so much focus on Virginia, but there are there are a couple of key municipal elections. Obviously, Bowie City. There's a mayor's race, Tim Adams, the incumbent, and Troy Stewart challenging also those council seats in cities across the state of Maryland for grabs. But here's one that's really interesting. The city of Rockville, in addition to the city council being up, they're going to be electing council members and a mayor. But here's the thing that I find really interesting. They're considering lowering the age, the voting age, from 17 to 16, and also voting to have non-U.S. citizens vote and a three-term term limit. But I think the thing that's really interesting to me, and this is a thing that could play a really big part moving forward, and we're just talking about the city of Rockville, not Montgomery County, but I think this portends to a movement that we are seeing in a lot of places where they're lowering the voting age. You know, Dr. Metzler, what do you think about that? We have so many young people now who are They're not legally adults, but they could very well vote at 16.
Yeah, I'm in some respects, I'm all about expanding the voter pool. I think that's extremely important because it starts to build, I think, a stronger bench. The question, however, is at 16, are you able to make those decisions? But, I don't know that I'm opposed to it necessarily, because, in fact, I know some 16-year-olds who are extremely involved in their own way in getting this done. And so I'm interested in seeing how that works as an experiment moving forward.
So my wife and I have 16-year-old twins.
Okay.
And so this is a very interesting idea for me.
You don't live in Rockville, do you?
No. I live up Georgia Avenue. It's a different kind of vote we're doing.
Right. So look, hold that point because I definitely want to hear what you have to say. I have got to take a break. Ben calling from Northeast D.C. We are going to talk to you next after this break as well. 202-319-7810. 202-319-7810. We're at the political roundtable talking about election 2023. Lines are still open. Give us a call and stay with us. The Daily Drum will continue on Sirius XM channel 141. I'm Harold Fisher. John Mons is next with the original Quiet Storm. That's on WHUR. We'll be back on Sirius XM in just a few seconds. Welcome back to The Daily Drum on Sirius XM channel 141. I'm Harold Fisher. We're at the Political Roundtable discussing election 2023. My guests are Dr. Ravi Perry, political science professor at Howard University, and political analysts Dr. Michael Fontroy and Dr. Christopher Meltzer. Lines are open at 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. You can X me at HFisherWHUR or find me on Instagram at Harold T. Fisher. Okay, Dr. Fontroy, I didn't know you had 16, yes. One pair of twins.
Yes. Yeah. One pair is enough.
Sure.
So my kids are smart and they pay attention to what's going on in the world. So I'm not going to say that a 16-year-old couldn't cast an educated ballot. As we know, there are tons of adults out here who are in their 40s, 50s, and 60s and can't seem to get it right, you know? Mm-hmm. So I don't want to jump up and down about that. But I do think it's fair to ask, is this really in the public's best interest? I don't quite know the answer, but I do think it's worth a conversation. And I would also add, this is not new in this region. Tacoma Park, Maryland did this years ago. Mm-hmm. And as far as I can tell, and I have to admit that I haven't dug into it too deeply there, but as far as I can tell, democracy has continued in Tacoma Park and it seems to have gone well.
Right.
So,
there are no pitchforks and torches in Tacoma Park.
Right. Now, Tacoma Park admittedly is a different kind of place and they're very progressive in that regard. And so I think what Rockville is also saying is, hey, look, we want to be on the vanguard of democracy, too. And so perhaps that has something to do with why they want to make this change.
But I'll only add that for me, as we all are, but as a black man in America, for me, what's important here that I always think about when it comes to youth voting, not only because I've been an educator of all kinds of different youth age groups for decades now, but also the fact that if we have a criminal justice system today that can declare a 12-year-old, a 14-year-old as an adult and put them in prison using adult sentences and the horrors of adult state and county and federal prisons, then, I really have a hard time then saying that, they can't at least exercise the right to vote. I have a very liberal view about voting. I think that voting should be made accessible to anyone and everyone that can obviously verify that they are meet our standards of citizenship, et cetera, and that we should make it easy for people to to participate. And until we get to that point, we're never really going to know how effective this system of government that we've had since 1789, with only 17 revisions since 1791, really can be if we keep having elections where 20, 30, 40% of the people who are eligible to show up only participate. And this is nationwide, but I think particularly in Black communities, yes, we need to fight oppression. Yes, we need to fight agendas that are not in Black interest, but we also need to get out the vote in our own communities.
You know, and to the issue about 16-year-olds voting, two things. I was 16 when I graduated from high school. And because of my parents being politically active as well as civically aware, just like, Brother Fauntroy here, your 16-year-old sons, this is your wheelhouse. They can't escape political discussions in your household because that's what you do. At 16, and as a high school graduate at 16, yes, I was paying attention. So that's the first thing. The other thing that I would say that about 16-year-olds not getting it right, air quotes, I think the only 16-year-olds who would vote are the ones who care. The other ones, as you said, what 16-year-old or 36 or 56 or 86, if you don't care, it doesn't matter how old you are, you're not going to participate. So, yeah, we'll see how that works out. And the council still has to approve that, even if the voters approve that the 17 to 16-year-old. 202-319-7810, Ben, calling from Northeast D.C. Thanks for hanging on, Ben. What's on your mind?
Okay, this Mr. Brandon Faith, Mr. Fisher. Thank you again for your platform.
Sure.
Okay, I know you can give me 30 seconds.
Right.
We're talking about the voting, right? We're talking about two presidents. One, the ex-president, who's up against 100 and something charges, maybe 57 felony charges. We're talking about the other one, the present president, whose impeachment has came up. We know Trump had two impeachments that he beat. These are two leading candidates. Talk about leading the nation. We talking about corrupt, man. Are we going to continue that corrupt guide our nation? Or are we going to change this thing up and people of color just stay out of vote just for one election? And see, because they're going to do it anyway. Just to see how this government is truly ran. Because they don't care nothing really about people of color. You got to be an excellent or an extravagant graduate with a master PhD or something like that to be called into these places that people of high learning go to.
So let me see what my panel has to say, and I will say this about that. Just for the sake of argument, every eligible Black voter in America did not vote, I think that would be a terrible thing.
You said that before, though.
I've said it, and I'll say it again. My opinions about that have not changed. So let me be clear. This isn't the Million Man March where they told black men to stay home and the buses didn't run and some stores had to close and some city services shut down for a day. That to have Black people not vote in a critical election, which is not to say that tonight is not a critical election, but let us just say, for the sake of argument, in the 2024 presidential election, that would be a disaster not only for Black people, it would be a disaster for this country. Dr. Metzler, I will start with you.
I absolutely agree. It would be a complete disaster. And look, for Black people not to vote because they are mad at Biden, because they think he's too old, because they think this, that, and the other. Okay, by not voting, you are actually voting for the alternative. So let's be real about how these things are and how they are occurring. And so this notion that somehow, well, one of them, he's going to be impeached and he's got corruption. And I hear all that. But it would be an unmitigated disaster. Consider what the alternative is. The candidates are going to be the candidates that we have. And so by sitting out, by not voting, what is that going to get you? More moaning, complaining, bellyaching. And so I think we have to look at this from a survival standpoint. I think we have to look at it from a realistic standpoint and stop believing all of this hype and all of this messaging that is disingenuous at best.
Yeah, yeah. Dr. Fauntroy, your thoughts about what Ben was sharing with us?
Well, I disagree in so many different directions. I'm not going to spend a lot of time on it other than to say, a lot of the things that impact us in our communities across the country are result of political decisions. So whether you're in Flint, Michigan or Jackson, Mississippi or some other place like that, and you don't have clean water to drink, well, some of that is because of political decisions that were made about the allocation of resources, right? Criminal justice, policing, education, all of these kinds of things, healthcare, housing, justice, all of these are areas in which politicians make the laws that are enforced that help, that impact our daily lives. So if we sit home on election day and do not participate, then all we're doing is making it easier for people who want to do us harm to be able to do us harm. And so on those grounds, I respectfully disagree. I hear Ben's frustration. I get it. But staying home is actually the worst possible answer to that problem.
Dr. Perry.
I will share this. I respect the sentiment because it is true that this is a system of government that has failed so many populations. However, one thing that this system of government that has failed so many populations has done since its inception has gotten better. Not because the institutions have necessarily wanted it to, but because the system ultimately allows for certain kinds of pressure, particularly pressure at the voting ballot box, to force institutions, and obviously with the courts as well, to force institutions to do what's in the interest of the will of the American people. And so, yes, the original document that ignored women, that ignored white men that didn't have property, that ignored African Americans, that ignored Native Americans. We just hosted here at Howard this weekend the Association for Ethnic Studies Conference, you know, where we engaged in international and national discussions on race and ethnicity. You know, this is the country we're sitting right now on Native American land, you know, that we don't necessarily acknowledge. But all that to say that the challenge of not participating is, understandably, I think, rooted in a recognition of the system not having done what it should have done for people of color. However, the irony is the only way of fixing that is by participating in the system. If you actually want a better outcome, the outcome is to participate. The only other remedy in the American political system to fix what you don't like about your mayor, your Congress, your state treasurer, whatever it might be, is to participate in elections to change that. And, you know, I was just reading a New York Times article that just says, oh, you know, this is an off-year election. I really resent, you know, the way media, characterizes these things. Election is an election. Every election is your opportunity to actually use the right that you have to participate in the governing decisions of everything that surrounds and affects you, from the pills that you get from CVS to the water you drink out of your faucet, as Dr. Fauntroy was saying, to the education that your children have, to the opportunity and job mobility that you have. All of this is related to the resources or not that you get from taxes, to your house being taxed too heavily or not. All of these are decisions that are made by government. And it's important to participate. And in fact, if we participate, and every time we've seen high levels of participation among black folks in particular, we have seen a government that not only looks like us more descriptively, but that substantively best reflects our interests. That's according to our own, you know, exit surveys and polls after those occurrences have happened.
Ben, thank you so much. I appreciate you listening. One other thing I will say, and you kind of touched on it, Dr. Perry, and just to put a really fine point on it, to only look at the presidential election vis-a-vis Trump and Biden, voters in general and black people more specifically do that at their peril. Because for the very reason that we are talking about Virginia right now, whatever your political leanings happen to be, when you were talking about, you know, electing a delegate in your own little corner of the world. If you live in Laurel, which is also, by the way, selecting a mayor and a council, Laurel, Maryland, there, you have to participate in that process. And keep in mind, and this is the long ball piece, if you vote for Joe Jones or Karen Smith, and for city council in your town, like a lot of politicians, they don't just stop here. And if the person that you vote for is doing what you want them to do, then they may run for mayor. They may run for delegate. They may run for state senator. They may run for president.
So Harold, today's member of the state legislature is tomorrow's member of Congress.
Yep.
And could be a president down the line. No question about that. I just want to make one quick point to highlight this as it relates to Virginia. So, you know, I'm on the faculty at George Mason University. And this morning I had former Governor Terry McAuliffe speak to my class. Mm. And he was talking about his view of this. Now, obviously, he's a bit, he's partisan. So, mm-hmm. So you got to take factor that in. But he's actually very optimistic about what's going to happen today in Virginia, in the House in the House of Delegates and in the State Senate, in part because there are people energized around issues that matter to them, primarily around choice. So that's part one. When people are energized, they go out and make it happen if they understand this, what's at stake. Secondly, I have a student who's running for sheriff in Loudoun County, Virginia, right now, a black man, right? And if he were to win, it would be historic,
yeah.
Right? So I know it feels like I'm banging on Ben, and I'm not. I just want to just make this quick point. We're also talking about electing people who come from a particular kind of sensitivity and will bring that sensitivity to their effort in that job. So imagine what would happen if you have a black man elected to the Senate, I'm sorry, as a sheriff in a particular county who is sensitized to the kinds of issues that all three of us at this table and so many other people that are listening to us, the unique issues around policing. That's going to be very different because he's elected, and he's going to be elected in part because black folks turn out. So if black folks don't turn out, he doesn't stand a chance, and we miss an opportunity to make real change.
Let me go back to the phone lines, 202-319-7810. Mia calling from Arlington, Virginia. Thanks for calling. What's on your mind?
Hi, yeah. I was really surprised that I got a check from Virginia Department of Taxation today. It was so weird, and it was just like some kind of rebate check, and it was mm-hmm. very clear that it came from Duncan.
Right.
But I said, okay, I took my bribery check, and I cashed it after I double-checked and made sure that it was, like, valid, and then I took myself down to the voting poll, and I voted anyway for, you know, my Democratic Party. And so I said, and I was saying to myself, like, okay, why is it that, you know, like, if Republicans are, they're usually all about not giving out money, and it's all about, and they're always about, you know, like freebies and you're taking money from us, but yet cheerfully he's writing these checks out to us to say, hey, you're going to get $200 if you're an individual, $400 if you're filing jointly, and go out and cash it, and everybody's getting their check today. I just found it fascinating. I also just want to say on a side note that my brother lives like way south in Virginia, and as I'm going down there, I'm seeing all these clam bakes and oyster bakes for the Republicans. So they're strong, and they're, I know we're kind of bubbled and cocooned up north, but down south, it's very much Republican country out there. So I don't know how this election is going to roll, but
to your point, Mia, just as strong as they are down in downstate in Virginia, Fairfax remains a Democratic stronghold and the most populated county in the Commonwealth. And then, of course, you have, you know, pockets. And that doesn't mean that there's going to be leaning one way or another. But, sometimes looking at the broader view, just like in so many places, even in the state of Maryland, for example, while there were no statewide races, happening right now in Maryland. But, you have pockets of Democratic support, pockets of Republican, and you got a whole bunch of independents as well. So if nothing else, grab your popcorn for tonight.
I don't have a television, so I'm not even. I'm just going to wait for Arlington now to tell me results. I like my bubble cocoon of Arlington.
Okay. All right. Well, thank you very much. I appreciate that even without a television, you are still voting.
Yeah.
That's a thing.
Yes, that's a thing.
That's a whole thing.
It makes life a lot more sane because I don't get the commercials.
Yeah, how about that? Mia, thank you so much. let's move west. Two big things right now, Dr. Metzler, in Ohio. The number one issue is this abortion referendum, and there's been so much discussion about that, and obviously the other one, pun intended, is making recreational marijuana legal in Ohio, which will really put the emphasis on those middle two letters, high. But,
Wow.
I was digging far for
that. Wow.
It's not bad. Well, that was pretty good, wasn't it?
I mean, I'm from Ohio, so.
Well, there you go.
I'm just going to say wow.
Dr. Metzler, what's going to happen in Ohio tonight? It seems to me, anecdotally speaking, that a lot of people are upset about this abortion issue, and that it could the pro-choice forces are predicted to really come out in force tonight.
Yeah, I think the pro-life choices the pro-choice folks are really going to come out in full force. From my understanding, they have a phenomenal ground game. Hopefully, they exercise that well. That will shake Ohio politics in some respects, but I think that's going to happen. On the marijuana piece, I'm not sure that's going to pass. I have some reservations on that, but I do think the abortion piece. The issue of Republicans now trying to walk back the abortion thing has not worked very well or very effectively, because again, once they are in office, the state legislators can do whatever the heck it is that they want to do, and they're the governor to veto them or whatever the situation is. But I do think that the pro-choice folks really are going to have a victory there. The marijuana piece, I'm not clear that's going to go for.
Well, right now, with 3% of the vote, the legalized marijuana issue is leading in the affirmative, 56-43. I'm sorry, it just changed, 58-41. So
yeah, I mean, we'll have to look at where those votes are coming from.
Coming from Dr. Perry's side of the state.
Yeah, yeah, Dr. Perry's entire family.
I would just say that, you know, here's a couple of things I think that are important to mention about Ohio that get lost in the national discussion, being from Toledo. Every major city in Ohio has been run by a Democratic mayor for the past 40 years. And when city dwellers, urban residents, and people who live right near the city edges vote in high numbers, Ohio is a little bit more like your shirt today, Harold. It's purple.
Exactly.
It gets cast as this conservative state, often like Massachusetts is wrongly cast as a liberal state when it's elected plenty of Republican governors.
Yeah.
And so Ohio can be quite purple, but it requires urban dwellers to be motivated to come out and vote. And, you know, in places where, like I'm from, in Toledo, also has a large population outside of Dearborn, Michigan, and Toledo, Ohio area of Arab Americans. And so when you see representatives like Rashida Tlaib and others pushing issues that might conflict the national Democratic story narrative, it's because the populations in the Midwest are a bit more complicated than I think the national story likes to make it to believe. And so I think marijuana legalization is likely, to the extent that urban dwellers actually vote in the election in Ohio today. And the issue with the abortion is that the pro opponents in amending the Constitution sought to muddle the water, so to speak, where the nomenclature, what you're reading when you go look at it, is very confusing. And so people don't really know what they're voting for. So that increases the chances there. But last thing I'll say quickly is that, you know, for today's election, I've lived in all the states. I've lived in Virginia, I've lived in Mississippi, I've lived in Ohio, and voted in all these three states. And what I'll say about all of them is that, you know, those states really do depend on urban voters coming out if you're interested in what so-called black interest might be in those states. And without urban support, then black interests in those states challenge us today. I don't know if we get a chance to talk about Mississippi. I hope so.
Yeah, we are. I'm going to jump to that real quick. I would just say that the one other point, having lived in Ohio myself, but also even before I did, when I was a very, very young man, one of the things I worked for a survey company. 50% of all of the surveys were done in Ohio, because Ohio then and probably now still considered the most average state in the nation. Median income, poverty, wealth, industry, colleges, everything is right down the middle. And which is why, you know, we've seen Ohio, be so prominent when it comes in presidential elections. So I think that's going to make sense. Real quick, Kentucky, Mississippi, Dr. Fauntroy, why do we care so much about Kentucky and Mississippi? Kentucky first.
Well, yeah, I'll just stick with Kentucky and leave Mississippi to Dr. Perry. Kentucky is important and interesting because there's an African American by the name of Dan Cameron who has been groomed and positioned for years by the white Republican establishment in the state to be a statewide potentially national political figure. He's a sort of milquetoast conservative in that regard, very much in line with conservative political positions. But he's a black man. So there's this notion that somehow he's going to be the tip of the spear, so to speak, in attracting black voters to the Republican Party.
You can't use spear when you're talking about black people, but anyway, go ahead.
Okay, fair enough.
You can't use that.
Fair enough. I stand corrected. But be that as it may, Brother Fisher, the Republican Party is constantly trying to identify somebody who they can show to the rest of the country and say, look, we like black people too. And Dan Cameron is the most recent example.
Yeah. Dr. Perry, Mississippi, could they have a Democratic governor?
Well, apparently it helps to be the cousin of Elvis, and so I think I think that that's really really is helping with name recognition. No, but this is also a gentleman that spent some time at Mississippi State University, where I used
Brandon
to teach.
Brandon Presley, yes.
Brandon Presley. He has been a well-respected businessman, has been very active in his town and county politics for many, many decades, and he has a significant following locally that has generated a large number of competitive polls with the incumbent Tate Reeves, who is suffering, I think, in part because, you know, there's two things that people forget about Mississippi. It's last on education, and it's also last on social mobility and economic strength. In other words, it's the poorest state in the country. And so, and yet, it, because of its conservative politics, it has yet to elect a governor that would expand Medicaid, which has been possible for now over a decade since Obamacare, so-called Obamacare, right? And yet people in Mississippi who need it the most have not been able to get it. And I think many people are exasperated with that. And Presley made that a key part of his campaign message. And I think it's resonating with people. But we have not seen a Democratic governor in Mississippi since I was
1999.
Since I was quite young.
Not as old as me.
So I don't think that
you just said you were old. That's not as old as you.
But I will add that there are three other statewide candidates in Mississippi for auditor, treasurer, and for Secretary of State that are African-American. And Mississippi, other than South Carolina, has 40% black population. And yet, because of gerrymandering, only has one congressional district that really caters to African-Americans with, you know, of course, with Representative Thompson. And with this opportunity, Democratic Party in Mississippi has put forth three really formidable black statewide candidates. And they might be the first ever black person to win statewide office in the state of Mississippi.
Yeah. I'm going to have to...
just one thing.
Dr. Metzler. I've got to run. Go ahead, real quick.
Yeah, just one thing on pigmentation politics, as Republicans say with Cameron, in Kentucky. The idea is that he wins the governorship, and then he replaces Mitch McConnell in the Senate. That's the idea.
Interesting. Dr. Ravi Perry, Dr. Michael Fauntroy, Dr. Christopher Metzler, thank you all so much for talking to us. That's the Daily Drum for this Tuesday, November 7th. I'm Harold Fisher. Good night.